You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for no blood, blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number three, and you're listening to the Common Sense Show, and we come to you live at this time every Sunday evening from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the Pacific Coast and from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the East Coast. And our thanks again to Mike Adams, our health reporter, Katie Whalen, Jim White, who stayed over and is going to help me conduct this interview with Joe Meyer. And Joseph Meyer is with us. He's from, his website is straightmoneyanalysis.com. He's got a terrific newsletter, and we'll tell you more about that. And he's got a special offer for our listeners tonight. And we're going to talk about some stuff that's pretty grim. And I'm going to tell you, if you think it's been grim to this point, you're going to white knuckle it during this hour, because things are going to really start unraveling in our economy. But rather than listen to me ramble about it, let's bring on someone much more knowledgeable than I am, and let's get his view. So, Joe, I want to thank you for joining us on this Sunday evening. I know it's getting late back there, and we always appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. Good evening, and thank you for having me on the Common Sense Show. It's always an extreme pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience.
Well, it is, and it's always great to have you. I mean, you've got to be, if you're not one of the top respected economists whose opinions are valued across this nation, you're in the top two. I don't think you share that honor with many people, and so we so appreciate you. But let's get right down to brass tacks here, Joe, because things are really grim. But when I turn on TV just to see what the enemy is up to, and occasionally I'll watch the news to see what the enemy's up to, I would almost walk away thinking everything is fine and things are going to continue, and those conspiracy theorists out there, they're a bunch of nutcakes.
Well, you know, I've said going back many, many years at the start of the purported economic recovery that it was an illusion and a fraud. And simply stated, Dave, the American dream continues to evaporate while we are continually told how wonderful things are, and more importantly, that they're getting even better. So I think we've got to be able to look at the hard data. We got to be able to look at the facts that truly matter, and we have to understand we're in an unprecedented time, and I believe we're facing the challenges, if not now, shortly ahead of us, that our great-grandparents faced in the Great Depression of the late 1920s, early 1930s, Dave.
You think it'll be about the same? Do you think it'll be worse? I mean, The projected impact in your mind, how is it going to be?
Well, I think it's going to be worse in many ways, because we've got a tremendous amount of debt that's been built up over the years. We've got a very poor job market, which is worsening, and we've got a shrinking middle class. And we've got asset classes now, when you talk about stocks and bonds and commodities in general, and more importantly, when you talk about housing, which I still believe is very overvalued and simply outpriced for the average working class American to be able to afford. I think you couple that, and we've talked about this in a previous show recently, the tremendous amount of leverage being employed in all these markets. When it unwinds, it's just simply going to be devastating, Dave. It's not a question of if it unwinds, it's a question of when. And I think when it unwinds, we're going to see these markets finally unravel, and I think we're going to see the day of reckoning that we've talked about for quite some time.
You know, I'm not a metaphysical person, Joe, by any means. I'm a data-driven person. But I was sitting in my chair one day, and I was just letting my mind wander. And my imagination said to me, go to bed on a Friday night, and by Monday morning, the world's going to be a lot different than you know it. Do you think that the corrections that are coming, the devastation that's coming, do you think it could happen that quickly?
I think it's going to be very sudden. I think it's going to be very unexpected. I think we have a very high degree of complacency, and I think people are being led to believe that even if things were to go wrong, somehow they're manageable, that we've seen difficult times before, and somehow we'll work our way through this. I believe one morning we'll get up, we'll turn on a TV set, and as you've just reiterated, we're going to be living in a different world and living in a different time. And if you've not prepared accordingly, I think for the difficult times ahead of us, it's going to be quite simply too late.
But you know, for our grandparents and great-grandparents that lived through the Depression, they had survival skills that we don't see today. For example, my grandmother knew how to can food.
Right.
I don't know anybody today in my life that knows how to can food, and that kept a lot of people from starving.
Well, I think when you go back certainly to the era of the 20s and certainly the balance of the Depression, which played out, as you know, through the 1930s leading up to Pearl Harbor in December of 1941 and the start of World War II, people going back in that time had to be extremely resourceful, they had to be extremely multi-talented, and they had to be able to survive in times that, quite frankly, we've read about in a history book, but up to this point, certainly in the society we've lived in, we've never experienced them.
Exactly. Well, before we delve too deep into the this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and this is how bad it can get discussion,
okay,
complete with numbers, let me bring my broadcast partner from the Red List News in, Jim White. And Jim, just kind of philosophically and to set the tone, what would you like to ask Joe?
You know, hi, Joe. Thanks. Thanks for taking time to answer my questions. I appreciate it. You know, we've heard a lot about either, you know, inflation. There seem to be two camps, an inflation camp or a deflation camp. Now, I'm certainly not an economic expert by any means. I do know, though, if a lot of dollars that are out there currently, and, you know, the world's flooded with them,
yes,
they start making their way back here across the ocean here to our shores, I just have a feeling the dollars that I have in my pocket or in my wallet are just not going to be worth as much as they are now. I know that sounds very simplistic, but could you sort of break down that concept of what happens when all this money starts coming back here, back to this country? We're going to have monopoly money pretty much, aren't we?
Well, I think we're in twilight of the dollar, and I've spoken to that for a number of years, and I think when you talk about certainly the average life of a fiat reserve currency, it's usually between 80 and 105 years. And I think when you talk about the dollar, it's been a reserve currency since 1920. So it's been a reserve currency about 95 years, and that's pretty much within a couple of years of what we've seen when we've spoken to reserve currencies of Portugal, Spain, the Netherlands, France, Britain. But I think when you talk about gold, Jim, you know, you go back to 1400 to the present time, you know, gold has held its value now, and it's been a storage of wealth and a hedge against inflation for over 600 years.
Indeed, and I'm a proponent of gold and silver. If I could just get one more question in.
Sure.
You know, with the, and we talked about it earlier before when I was on with Dave, the derivatives is in the quadrillions.
Yes,
if they've even got it accurately, but it's in the quadrillions. They have to know that there is no way mathematically, I'd heard it said that we could take everybody's wages, not just the taxes they pay, but everyone's wages for a whole year in this country and try to pay down these derivatives or this debt, and we wouldn't even come close. They have to know this is going to collapse, don't they? I mean, it's a mathematical impossibility to pay all this back, is it not?
Well, that statement is absolutely true, and it is an impossibility, and the derivatives problem is probably worse than we even know. And when you talk about the extreme leverage, getting back to that again, that's being implied in all of these markets, it's not going to take too much of a move to the downside to really start to snowball down the hill. That is the greatest danger, and I think when you talk about, you know, interest rates, derivatives, and certainly the problems we'll see in the bond market that'll spill over to the stock market, which eventually will affect the underlying economy, we're facing a catastrophic consequence. You know, what will be the event that will start the snowball down the hill? Well, it could be several different events, but we could get a black swan out of anywhere. One morning we turn on a TV and our lives as we know them have changed forever.
Well, you know, I had heard that a lot of these banks are tied in, like you had said, and they have each other's assets tied up. So if one sort of goes down, they all go down. The whole cabal is sort of, you know, they sort of, I think of how they tie all the boats together on a rafting trip. I think they've all tied themselves pretty much together. And if one goes down, will it not create a domino effect, like if a UBS goes down? That's going to pretty much cause everybody else to fail, is it not? Or at least put a serious, serious strain on the market?
Well, what you've said is absolutely true, but when you talk about all the central banks of the world, all the economies of the world in this so-called purported global economy, they're all tied in together. All the central banks of the world are dependent on each other to continue to pump liquidity into the system. And at some point, it has to end. You know, the Fed's balance sheet going back before the crisis began in 2007 and 8 was right around $800 billion. The Fed balance sheet now is currently $4.1 trillion. There isn't any way that the Fed can continue to fund these markets or continue to fund these budgetary deficits and continue to pump liquidity into the system. This is an ending rather than a fresh beginning, Jim. It's just a question of when we start to see the real problems.
You know, if I could just get one last...
Ahead,
sorry,
Jim.
Dave.
Sure.
One last one, and I apologize for interrupting. I'm seeing that as long as we have the strongest military force on the planet, and we can see over and over again we're not afraid to use it, don't we kind of extort some countries into continuing to use the dollar, even though it's not necessarily in their best interest, because they're fearful of the potential retribution from the United States by going off the dollar? Is there any truth to that?
Well, we're seeing countries now, as I've said repeatedly, selling oil for gold. We see countries buying oil for gold, and we see countries moving away from using the dollar, certainly in their transactions. You know, Iran is certainly at the forefront of this. Russia is certainly now doing it and doing it very regularly. And at some point, we're going to see China move away from the dollar and back the yuan with gold. Again, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. You know, we lose sight of the fact of just how much gold China has accumulated. You know, we're told that they own around 3,300 tons, but I don't believe it. I believe, Jim, China's holding currently between 20 and 25,000 tons of gold. If I am right, and I have no reason to believe I'm wrong, if they're holding 20 to 25,000 tons of gold, they would be holding three times the purported amount of gold that the Fed is holding at Fort Knox.
Interesting. Boy. So where does that leave the United States in terms of gold holdings?
Well, we question really how much we have. We're told we're holding around 8,300 tons, but people lose sight of the fact that at the end of World War II, we were holding about 20,000 tons. But we've sold off a lot of it. As you know, countries who've tried to repatriate their gold have been turned down. The only country that was able to get back their gold was Venezuela prior to Hugo Chavez becoming ill. But every country that's tried to repatriate their gold after that has been refused. Germany recently, as you know, Dave, tried to repatriate their gold, and they were told it would take several years in which to return the gold holdings that have been on deposit at the Fed Bank in New York.
Yeah, let's talk about Germany for a minute.
Sure.
They did something last week that just absolutely shocked me. Now, you know that Germany gets a lot of their oil from Russia.
Yes, they do.
And their heating oil in particular. And do you think those two events are connected, the fact that they're giving tacit approval to Russia's invasion of Syria because Russia can blackmail them with heating oil?
Well, I don't think it's coincidence.
You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I think there was probably leverage implied that Germany and all of Europe is dependent upon Russia for oil and, more importantly, natural gas. and we are heading into the winter. It's probably going to be a severe winter all through Europe, and I think Germany is starting to realize that Russia now is a force that has to be reckoned with.
Absolutely.
Both militarily and economically.
Are you seeing any awareness in the market that could indicate that they're anticipating a Russian blackmail of shipment of heating oil into Europe in the winter season?
Well, I think when we look at the volatility we've had in oil, you know, I've said repeatedly that I thought we had made a pretty good long-term bottom in that $35-$37.50 a barrel area. I think we're probably going to see oil continue to consolidate probably in this $42.50 to $45 a barrel area. But, you know, you go back, there's six periods, and I think you and I, Dave, in a previous show talked about that, when oil doubled within a two-year period of time, and I think we could see oil double from these levels again in a two-year period of time. But the prior periods where we did see oil double in a two-year period of time was January 1974, November 1979, September 1980, June of 2000, August 2005, and December 2008. So I think oil is going to continue to be a strategic asset. It's the lifeblood of industry, and I think at some point we're going to continue to see oil prices and gasoline prices move back up.
You know, I'm hearing that a lot, too. But, Joe, let me put it this way. From my perspective, and I want to get your reaction to this, and I'm not sensitive, so if you disagree, please feel free to say so. But I would rather see, and my audience could get mad when I say this, but I'd rather see oil prices double than I would see go the other direction by double, because if they go too far the other way, my fear is that there won't be enough liquidity in the market to ship products, and our just-in-time deliveries will slow down if not stop. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think you're spot on, and you're absolutely right. And I think to get back to a point Jim raised earlier, you know, do we see deflation? Do we see inflation? I think the answer is we see both. I think we see asset classes that are going to certainly have inflationary forces brought upon them, and we're going to see other asset classes where deflationary forces come to the forefront. I think when you talk about housing, and you and I spoke about that in the last show we did together, you know, I don't believe housing can go up from these price levels, so I think it has to go down. I think when we talk about the current rate of home ownership, it's fallen to a 48-year low. Home ownership is now at the lowest level, Dave, and you know this, since 1967 at the level of 63.4%. And the low level of home ownership is just not a decline. It signals the collapse of housing, which I think is still ahead of us. And simply the main cause and culprit of falling home ownership is the lack of good-paying jobs. And this has been going on now for a number of years.
Yeah, that's where I'd like to take that comment about home ownership. You always hear that local politicians like the idea that they have lots of homeowners in their area because home ownership speaks of stability to the community. So when we see a reduction in home ownership to record lows as we're seeing, what does that mean for our cities and towns?
Well, I think it tells you the demographics of America are changing, and changing very rapidly. And I think when you talk about 56% of all Americans now having subprime credit, I think that speaks volumes in itself. And then I think when you talk about the new jobs, 60% of the new jobs created, as you know, over the last several years have been entry-level positions paying less than $13 an hour. And I think when you talk about housing, we've got mortgage applications now at the lowest level in over 20 years, going back to the levels we last witnessed in 1995. And you couple that with our young college graduates now unable to service their debt. We have 50% of all students at 347 universities and vocation schools now defaulting on their loans. And we have student loans outstanding that currently total $1.2 trillion. What does that tell you? Things
could
are
the
good?
Student, well, no, absolutely not. Of course it's not good. But do you think... okay.
You know, I'm going to tell
I gotta
you
I got to gather
something.
Myself here.
I'm going to tell you something you probably don't know. John Templeton, who founded Templeton Mutual Funds, and he's gone now a couple of years, but I heard one of the last interviews Sir John did talking about housing, and this was around, oh, I would say 2005 or 6. And John Templeton, who was a young man during the 1920s and the Depression that took the 1930s, talked about what he thought the future of housing would be in the scope of the long-term picture. And he made the statement that he believed the bottom of housing inevitably would be when a home sold for only 10% of the prior cycle's highest price. And what he was actually saying is, if you bought a home at $100,000 and it went to $250,000, it would sell at the bottom of the next cycle at $25,000. I never forgot that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but this was John Templeton, who was a student of the Depression. He was an expert on the crash in 1929. And that's how much he thought housing was truly overvalued when we saw the top in 2005 and 6, Dave.
It certainly gives one a baseline that they could look at and say, you know, trouble lies ahead. You know, we've got about a minute to the break, and we may have to continue this on the other side, but let me just throw the question out there. Which is going to be more devastating to the economy and to the most number of people, the student loan debt or the housing bubble that's ready to burst?
Well, I think when you talk about the housing bubble, when you go back and you talk about the subprime mortgage crisis, when the housing bubble and the debacle unfolded, the last time around it was only $1 trillion. Do you know we have subprime debt now in the mortgage sector? It's $2 trillion. It's twice as bad, Dave.
Wow, man, that's incredible. You just gave that figure out, too. 56% of the Americans have subprime mortgages.
Yes, they do. They have subprime credit.
Credit, yeah, and which means they're holding on to losers. That's what it means.
That's exactly what it means.
If this were corporate America, they'd be jettisoning this. And
yes,
honestly, you could make a case that Chapter 7 might be justified for a lot of these people.
Absolutely.
You agree with that?
Yes.
I don't want to agree with myself on that, Joe. Yeah, it's too radical. Anyway, we're going to step away for just a minute here for a quick break, and we'll be back with my guest, Jim White, my broadcast partner, Red List News, and famed economist, Joseph Meyer. Stay tuned. Well, you heard me in the last segment mention to Joe Meyer that we are living in a time when people don't have the necessary survival skills. And he actually said that, and I reiterated to talking about that my grandparents knew how to do canning, and I don't know anyone today that knows how to can food. I know there's some out there, and I know I'll get some emails on that point. But it's not a universal skill, and it saved a lot of Americans from starvation. So what can you do? Go to Storable Food. And that's foodforliberty.com/Hodges. Again, that's foodforliberty.com/Hodges. And it's Jim White and I goal that every American has at least 1 year of food per person. But we'd like to see you get two, because when the crash comes, and something we'll ask Joe when we come back, how long will the crash go? What will be the steps towards getting some kind of normalization, and any guesses that he might have in terms of stability? But until then, you're going to have to be self-sufficient, and I, for one, don't know how that long that period's going to be. That's foodforliberty.com/Hodges. Also, I'd like to remind you to visit our website for the show at thecommonsenseshow.com. Please sign up for our newsletter, and we have lots of goodies that go out every single morning, arrives at 7 a.m. Eastern, 4 a.m. Pacific, so you can start your day out with the latest in news. So that's thecommonsenseshow.com. And again, Jim White and I have launched this venture called redlistnews.com, which is a compact form of news that you can take with you and get the 6 top stories of the day in less than 15 minutes. Well, we're joined by famed economist Joe Meyer, who has a website, straightmoneyanalysis.com. And Joe, before we jump into what I had mentioned during the commercial break that I wanted to discuss, let's talk a little bit about your newsletter, your website, and the special offer that you've made available for listeners to the Common Sense Show.
Well, straight money analysis has been around since September of 2009. We have subscribers to it, Dave, from all over the world. And we write very extensively on the economy and the stock and bond markets. We write about the energy markets, both crude oil and natural gas. We also write about the precious metals, both gold and silver, and we also have a very extensive commentary in every issue about Fed monetary policy. What I want to offer the listening audience of the Common Sense Show is a full one-year subscription to the newsletter, which is normally $259.95 a year, for the six-month subscription price, which is $149.95 for 6 months, which will save the listening audience subscriber $110 on the subscription. It will also entitle you, as we do with every subscriber, if you ever have a question or you have a need to speak with me directly, you can always call and speak to me by phone. We're here to talk to every listening audience member of the Common Sense Show, and we're here to help in any way we can, Dave.
And to take advantage of that offer, people simply just need to mention that they heard you on the Common Sense Show, and they'll get a one-year newsletter for half price.
Well, they go to the straightmoneyanalysis.com website. There's a secure PayPal terminal. Click on the six-month subscription, and under instructions for the merchant, put Common Sense Show, and we will credit you for a full one-year subscription, and you've taken out a six-month subscription.
Good deal. Great deal. Okay, let's go back to my hypotheticals.
Okay.
And I realize we're kind of painting a hypothetical model, but I'm wondering about, okay, so the currency collapses and things begin to fall down around us. How quickly will things unravel, and what will happen in the interim? What should people need? And then what eventually will these paper currencies that are fiat currencies be replaced with by the globalist bankers?
Well, you know, I did some research recently on nine previous historic bear markets to put in perspective where I think this bear market, as it unfolds, can certainly go, not only by the percentage loss that I think we can see, but more importantly, the time duration of the bear market. And I'd like to run the nine previous bear cycles that we've had by you, give you some statistics, and then give you the average market loss over these nine bear markets, and also give you the average bear market duration that the bear market was in force. And then lastly, and more importantly, try to give you some numbers where I think if this bear market really accelerates and becomes as brutal and as nasty as I think it will be, where I think we could see the lows and over what period of time.
Okay, sounds good.
The first historic bear market, as you know, was September 1929 to June 1932. It had a loss of 86.1% and a duration of 34 months. Second one took place May 1946 to June 1949, had a loss of 29.6% and a duration of 37 months. Third one took place December 1961 to June of 1962, had a loss of 28.6% and a duration of 6 months. Number four, November of 1968 to May of 1970, had a loss of 36.1%, had a duration of 18 months. Number five, January of 1973 to October 1974, had a loss of 48%. Duration, 21 months. Number six, November 1980 to August of 1981, had a loss of 27.8%. Duration, 21 months. Number seven, August of 1987 to December of 1987, loss 33.5%. Duration, 3 months. Number eight, March of 2000 to October 2007, loss 49.1%, duration 30 months. And number nine, October of 2007 to March of 2009, loss 56.4%, duration 17 months. So the average bear market loss of those nine prior bear markets, Dave, was 43.9%. Average bear market duration was 21 months. So if we just take the average and we look at the Dow High, which was 18,353, a 43.9% average correction would equal a potential Dow price level of 10,278 or an 8,075 point loss. And I think we could possibly be looking at probably in the element of a time frame 24 to 36 months to make the bottom, Dave.
So 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Boy, that's
minimum.
I hate to say
and
this.
And that's just going back, taking the average of what's happened all through history with vicious bear markets that we've experienced. So we had two times where we had losses close to 50%, and as you know, in the Great Depression, we had a loss of 86%. So what I'm saying is this market can go down a hell of a lot more than most people would want to believe.
Yeah, you've projected out what the average of the nine were and superimposed it on today's standing. But there is one variable there that I don't think the other nine had, Joe. And the other nine busts did not have $1.5 quadrillion of credit swap derivatives debt.
Excellent point.
Because when you,
that's
when
why
you
I think it's going to be very, very devastating, and that's why I think, you know, the previous bear markets we've had are just nothing but a yardstick. You know, they're pointing us towards a number that we can certainly seem to believe is feasible and real. But I think when you put in the derivatives and you pile on all the debt that we owe, it could be a lot worse.
I don't see any, well, unless someone's willing to repudiate the derivatives debt, which I don't see happening. I mean, do you see that happening?
No.
I don't either. I don't either. And as this slide happens, it's going to eat up a lot of the wealthy too, not the super wealthy, but it's going to start eating up the food chain. And Joe, let me ask you, what do bankers do when they start losing money?
They do what they always do. They keep trying to create more of it.
Well, I would even have a flip side to that, and I agree with what you're saying. I mean, Helicopter Ben said, we'll drop the money out of helicopters. You know, that's Ben Bernanke, former Fed chair. But I think they start wars.
Well, you know, I think all the central banks of the world are committed to continue to inflate. I think at this point it doesn't make any sense because these asset bubbles just cannot continue to expand, and I think they're slowly starting to lose air. And the central banks of the world are fighting deflation, as you know, tooth and nail. And that's the reason why we see global interest rates at levels which are just totally unrealistic. We should have had the Fed raise interest rates, as I'm sure you'll agree, well over a year ago. We've got the Fed now backed into a corner with the markets now being very fragile and very skitterish. And in the U.S., they're unable to do it. And more importantly, we've got big problems coming out of China. We've got China now in a very serious recession. We've got the Shanghai market, which has already lost one-third of its value. And I don't believe in the big picture, Dave, we're anywhere near a long-term bottom. The Shanghai had traded right around 5,000. It's right around 3,100, and I think the bottom is probably 2,250. And we've got the Chinese government now supporting the market and pumping massive amounts of liquidity into the economy. And I think that's a major problem moving forward. And as you know, China just recently staged the largest currency devaluation in 20 years to help revive exports. And the manufacturing is now in a slowdown we haven't seen in 6 years. We're at the lowest point in manufacturing in China since March of 2009. So there's a lot of things going on globally that people are just not aware of.
And wars distract people from that, and it's like crack cocaine. I mean, you get high for a while, and eventually you got to pay the fiddler on the withdrawals. But still, I'm looking at a possible war. Let me bring Jim into this. Jim, what further questions do you have for Joe?
You know, I'm wondering, after after, you know, there's obviously going to have to be some sort of a global reset, because we've discussed earlier, you know, the quadrillions of dollars of derivatives can't possibly be repaid. So no. Something's going to have to collapse, a reset, start over, something. I don't know how it's going to happen, but they can't obviously continue it forever. I'm curious to know, what's it going to look like after that? Are the dollars in our pockets going to look the same? They're just going to be like in a basket of currencies? Are they going to try to go with the one world currency? Are they going to go fully electronic with maybe smart cards or some sort of chip, you know, chip technology or something? Do you have any insight on that, about what our currency is going to look like post-collapse?
Well, I think there isn't any question that we're going to see problems in all asset classes. We're going to see problems in all the world currencies. I think it's a question who goes back on the gold standard first. We were on the gold standard for 27 years. We've been off of it 44 years. And at some point, we've got to see a global reset of all asset classes, a global reset of all the world currencies. China, I think, will back the yuan with gold. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. Do we have enough gold in our reserves to even go back on the gold standard? Probably at this point, I would seriously doubt it. But we've got to get back to intrinsic value of what these asset classes are truly worth and what they're worth in a stable currency that would be backed by gold. That's the wild card, Jim, as we move forward.
You know, throughout history, you see the countries that are involved in the most productivity and produce the most typically end up with the most gold. And you see that happening now in China. As you can see, you know, this started, what, 20, 30 years ago, the whole Made in China. And there were certain pockets of, you know, unions certainly stood up and tried to stop. And they sounded the call and said, if you continue to outsource this labor to China, there'll be no jobs left. And we see how that's happening here. But there's no doubt that the gold situation is going to seriously tip the global financial scheme or scenario in China's favor in the long term. Would you agree with that?
Yes, it is.
Well, that was
excellent.
Blunt, yes. And to the point. Joe, if you don't feel that you have enough to answer this, I understand. But one of the things that I wondered, and I actually wrote about this, the day that China tried to decouple from the dollar, they had a chemical plant explosion, and since then they've had three more, and I have a hard time believing in all these coincidences. Did you react to that as well?
Well, I think when we saw the volatility come into the markets, and we're seeing volatility now certainly much greater than what we have witnessed before. We're getting big moves in the stock markets of the world, both up and down. We're getting big swings in gold and silver, both up and down. We've had big swings daily in the price of oil. So there's definitely something going on. I think we're seeing people moving out of certain asset classes, moving out of certain commodities and certain currencies, and I think we see now the serious money going into the precious metals. I think we've got money, quite honestly, Dave, being pulled out of all these global stock markets all around the world. And I think the economics and, more importantly, the politics of the world are now shifting, and shifting very dramatically. And I think we're probably going to see some more surprises as we come into the end of the year. I think that's what's ahead of us.
I knew somebody once, and I really got to be nebulous in how I express this, but I want to see if you have any knowledge of this, and if you don't, it's okay. But what I was told was, as the markets open around the world, so you get an opening in New York and you get later openings as you span the globe, that there were a group of, let's see, wealthy elite, and it took tens of millions of dollars just to get into this, that would move one currency in opposition to another, play one currency off of one another, and they would do so in the pre-market opening periods all across the globe, and they would just time it. It'd be one market right after the other, and they'd walk away with unbelievable amounts of money just by manipulating currencies before the markets open. Do you have any knowledge of that?
Well, I think we have a lot of black boxes that are certainly being used in all of these markets. I think that's the only way you can certainly explain the volatility and certainly the sharp movement of price that we've seen now occur on a regular basis. But, you know, getting back to talking about gold, few people realize 1 ounce of gold has bought the Dow twice in history, Dave. It bought it in 1932 and it bought it in 1980. And I've got to believe 1 ounce of gold will buy the Dow again. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when and at what price. So if 1 ounce of gold is going to buy the Dow, and I seem to believe that the Dow in this bear market that's ahead of us could correct down to 9 or 10,000, I don't rule out that we see gold probably trade somewhere between 7,500 and 10,000 an ounce. I really don't.
And you're talking about the physical gold, not the certificates.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, do you subscribe to the notion that if you can't touch it, you don't own it?
Well, I think when you talk about the paper markets are no way reflective of the physical market, and I think a lot of people own the paper market, and what they don't understand, I don't believe there's anywhere near the physical to back up the paper that people would want to believe. And I've said repeatedly, going back, you know, from the beginning of when I wrote the newsletter, that I wanted people to certainly take possession of the physical gold and silver, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. If you don't possess it, you don't own it.
Yeah, that's what our friend Steve Quayle says as well, and I happen to agree with him. I've steered clear of their certificates, and I don't begrudge these people. I just don't think it's a wise investment. I think all paper is going to eventually go away.
Well, I think when you talk about the leverage in the paper market, we got 100 paper contracts written for every ounce of underlying precious metal, 100 to
yeah.
1. So how could there be enough physical to back up all those paper contracts? It's an impossibility, Dave, mathematically impossible.
Yeah, the only way to really make money on it is to trade the paper and get out at the right time.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But
you know, I have a good feeling.
When you talk about 40-year cycles in gold, you had highs 1920, another one 1980. We got the next projected 40-year cycle high in 2020. And then when you talk about silver, most people don't realize silver follows a 50-year cycle, Dave. Ratio of 16 ounces of silver equaling 1 ounce of gold happens every 50 years. Happened 1870, 1920, 1970. Projected again 2020. So this bull market in the precious metals has a minimum 5-6 years of life to it. I know a lot of people want to believe the precious metal bull is over and the greatest gains are now behind us, and I couldn't disagree more. I think these levels we're seeing both in the price of gold and silver we'll never see again in our lifetime.
The opportunity is there, and this is why I advertise for Steve Quayle's gold. I mean, I believe. And what it is, this is the time to buy when it hits bottom. Jim, you had a question for Joe?
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment. Sorry to interrupt there. I was saying that the paper market's leveraged 100 to 1.
Right.
And I assure you that the little guy is not going to be the one that gets his out first. He'll be the one left holding, you know, with the John Corzine. Look at the scam he pulled. The little guy always pays. The bank always wins is basically what it comes down to. It seems that way.
Well, you've got to take possession of your physical, and I've said many times, if you buy coin over the counter, put it in your pocket and take it home and put it away where it's safe. I don't believe with what is going on in the economy, and more importantly, what I believe, Jim, that's ahead of us in all these markets, you can trust anybody. I think if you take possession of your gold and silver and you put it away where it's safe, it's your responsibility to ensure that it continues to be safe, but at least you know where it is and you can put your hands on it. I don't think you can trust anybody to hold the physical. I really don't.
Do you think they're gonna the powers that be are going to outlaw the private ownership of gold once they've garnered as much as they can?
Well, you know, I've had people say to me, do you think that I'd be asked to surrender my gold and coin as was done in the 1930s with President Roosevelt? I said, well, they could very well ask you to surrender it, but I don't believe anybody this time will turn it in. I really don't, Dave.
Okay, that's my point exactly, although people might want to think about good hiding places.
Wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, you know, it's just like IRS enforcement. They can't catch all the tax cheats, but they catch a few and make an example out of them. You don't want to be one of the few, so you got to learn how to hide your resources. I want to lay a quick scenario out for you.
Sure.
And so we have a collapse on Friday. By Monday, you know, all you know what's broken loose, and Obama's on TV trying to reassure everybody, but things are going to hell in a handbasket, and then there's no denying the collapse. You couldn't give your money away to anybody. How long do you think we would stay in that in-between period? What would be happening during that time? And what will a debased, failed currency be replaced with if the bankers get their way?
Well, you know, if you go back, and again, you study history, and you study what took place in Germany in the 1920s, you know, they had lost World War One, and in the early 1920s, they witnessed massive hyperinflation. In fact, hyperinflation was so bad during the Weimar Republic in the 1920s that a one-ounce gold coin bought a whole city block in Frankfurt, Germany. And people had a wheelbarrow full of paper money. They couldn't buy a loaf of bread. So that's what took place in Germany in the 1920s when they had hyperinflation and the currency became worthless. And I'm certainly not comparing, you know, where we are currently with Germany. But I think you've got to have some cash. You've got to have a plan in which I think to survive a minimum of 90 to 120 days, you know, once we start to see the real problems unfold in the system. And you've got to have the ability, and you touched upon it earlier, to have survival skills and be able to put food on your table and certainly keep a roof over your head. So could this be a very serious time? Could it be a period of time that could last, you know, longer than we want to believe at this point? Absolutely.
But longer than the 2 to 3 year
average. But I think to not have a plan and not be able to count on some form of employment through your multitasking ability with very good job skills, that's going to be another major problem as we move forward through difficult times. Do you have the job skills to continue to be able to earn a living in this difficult period? Most people don't.
I know. They don't, and they don't have the survival skills. FEMA tells us, and I have published this result from their studies, that 75% of us don't have enough resources to make it through 72 hours.
I think that's being somewhat optimistic. It's probably even less than that.
That's frightening, Joe. That's a multitude of hordes, marauding hordes, that'll be going house to house to seek resources on the fourth day for what they don't have.
Well, I think it's going to come down to, as our parents, you know, once they were dependent upon neighbors, they were dependent upon friends, and they had pools of resources where families were very close and they worked together. I know we live in a society that's certainly far different than what our parents and grandparents certainly experienced, but I think the simple fact is no one can go it alone and no one can survive it alone. We are dependent, whether we want to admit it or not, on one another. And that's something I think at this point most people don't realize, Dave.
I agree.
We can't do it all.
Joe, we're just about out of time, so I just
want
to give out your website again, straightmoneyanalysis.com. And there is a secure place there for you to order Joe's newsletter, and you'll get, for Common Sense Show listeners, 1 year for a 6-month subscription. And Joe, a little scary, but always really informative. We want to thank you for joining us.
Well, I want to thank you, Dave. I think the key is preparation. I think we have to prepare for tough times. They are coming our way. And I think with proper preparation and certainly the ability to understand what is happening and what it means, I think we're going to be able to get through it.
Well, my friend, I hope you're right. I think a lot of us are going to be challenged. But thanks so much for joining us, Joe.
I want to thank you as always. It's a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience on the Common Sense Show. And good luck to you, Jim. It was a pleasure speaking to you as well.
Pleasure was all mine, Joe. Thanks so much. Best of luck to you.
Have a good
You're our go-to guy, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
Okay, you're welcome. Well, a couple of announcements here because we were winding down to the end of the show. Just want to mention next week we're still working on the show, but we do have one guest confirm, well, actually we have two. Katie, who's not really a guest, but Katie will be on with her health report. But also we have Dane Winnington, and he's no stranger to my friend Jim White, and he's going to talk to us about geoengineering. And it seems like Dane is everywhere and anywhere at the same time, kind of like Joe Meyer. And so you're going to want to not miss this interview. And we're working on a surprise guest. I can't say yet, but we will publish it on the Common Sense Show during the week. Also, later this evening, I'm pre-recording a show with Sheila Zielinski. And that show is going, that interview is going to air Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern on theweekendvigilante.com. And that's Sheila's website. That's weekendvigilante.com, 6 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. So you're going to want to tune in and hear what the two of us have to say about, well, we're going to talk a lot about interesting things tonight, among which are the national cities, something we didn't get to, putting together a UN international police force. Oh boy, yeah, you heard me correctly. We're going to be talking about that as well. Boy, 5 hours of radio for me today, Jim, because right when we're done here, you and I are going to go pre-record the Red List News for the morning.
Indeed, Dave. It's we're tireless workers, my friend, because we love liberty and we love freedom, and we certainly love our audiences. And you know, we're just doing it certainly not for the money. We're doing it for the love of our children and many other things, Dave. So I'm honored to do it, and thank you so much for having me on the air here with you tonight.
Well, it's been my privilege and pleasure, and I'm really proud of what we put together on Red List News, because we're hoping that we'll appeal to the busy crowd and people will be able to keep up, and we think we're providing a valuable service. We're certainly not getting rich off of this by any means, but that's not the goal. The goal is to wake people up so we can have lots of allies in the coming tough times, because you heard what I said in the earlier part of the show. I really think that it's going to come down to someday that America is going to be in a survival fight, and guerrilla warfare will be the chosen mode for our survival. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But Jim, everything I read says we can't win a war of attrition. We should do a show on this. We should do a show on comparative military analysis. I've got some good sources. Jim, I know you do as well. And we should probably do a show on this where we break it out and say, here's what the BRICS got, here's what we got. And that's assuming NATO holds together. And I don't know that that's a firm proposition. Anyway, you hear the music. We're out of time. So we'll see you next week with Dane Winnington. Go out and have a great week. God bless.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste, and even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.